This week on the Reflex Blue Show, we tell you how to brand your company. It's a cold fall day in Nebraska, and we're doing another Reflex Blue Show.
Hey, this number like 21.
It is. We do some episodes.
We should be playing blackjack in like memory of this.
Yeah, hit me. Hit me. I want you to hit me as hard as you can. Are Fight Club references lame now? Is Fight Club lame?
You know, I did see you can buy like a resin cast of that soap that says Fight Club. I thought that'd be sweet to sit around the office.
You know what else you can do? You can just buy some pink soap. Just put your artistic and design ability into that. You know what we should do? We should have a Fight Club soap contest on the site. Speaking of contests, I think this is the last show before the student design competition entries are due.
Yeah, it's going to be due right before Thanksgiving. Next Wednesday at like 5 o'clock or something.
Yeah, get on it, people.
Email us your JPEGs.
I know that people have got entries for this. Send them in.
Okay, so now, Nate, I did get my CS4 finally.
Yeah, we were going to talk about that because you actually got the CS4. Did you get it in a slightly, let's say, romantic-styled box?
Not in the
slightly
way you're talking
erotic
about.
Master Collection box?
I did have them ship me the box with the CDs because I was afraid that, you know, eventually my hard drive will die again like it always does.
Yeah, you got a thing with killing your hard drives.
And
I don't know what you do over here.
And I'll, like, somehow not have the download version archived. And so I just said, just ship me the little box.
Right. Okay.
Which has no instruction booklet or anything. It's just, like, the DVDs.
There's a box with some, like, loose CDs in it and a couple floppies. Just plack, plack, just in there.
And a couple of, like, remnants of, like, Cracker Jacks.
All right, so we've been talking about this for like three shows, and now, I think a CS launch we can talk about for three shows, but now this is the first time either of us have had any actual hands-on experience with it.
Not a ton that I've used it, so I haven't noticed. There's nothing that I've noticed that's going to be like, whoa, I can't run, I wish I wouldn't have upgraded during this big deadline stuff, because everything runs similar enough.
Yeah,
I noticed like the shortcut key in Dreamweaver to switch to the file menu changed. That upset me a little bit.
Oh, snap. What is that shortcut?
It's like Shift Command F instead of F8.
That's not a shortcut hitting three keys. And by the way, why is the file menu in Dreamweaver, why is that a separate window that can be placed by, why is that not a toolbar item? Why is that not a palette? What is the deal with that?
Because it has to have all those files in it. It'd be like,
it would be a huge palette. I agree.
Well, you can expand it out.
Well, yeah, but it like, can you lock that to the side of the screen like everything else? I don't think that you can.
Not in the expanded mode.
It's like a window, and it needs to be a palette. And hey, Adobe, get on that.
Now, I did.
I would
open...
love to be on the developer team like Von Glitzka for Dreamweaver, because you know who knows a lot about
he was on Illustrator.
Websites?
And Illustrator.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
The best feature, though, is you still can open your old freehand documents, which, thanks to our readers, we found out you could.
Yeah, is our listeners.
Or you can open your freehand documents, but now you can open a multi-page freehand document, and it'll open up all the pages.
That's nice.
Which means you can have multi-pages in Illustrator, which
I
want to
play with that. One of the things that I need to do is I have done my research, and I believe I have figured out all of the ins and outs of the Adobe Education Discount.
Okay.
Which you and I, as professors, that is something of interest.
Yeah,
and
but
also to our student listeners, look, if you're a student, the discount is redonkey Kong. Okay, so but I think I've figured out all of the ins and outs and pluses and minuses of how that works.
Okay, now it's the same versions.
Yes,
and except for you're to use it for educational use and not professional.
BS. One thing that I know, and this is available on the Adobe website on their FAQ that I somehow stumbled upon, is that not only is it the full licensed version, it is absolutely available to use for commercial purposes. That is spelled out clear as day. Now, two exceptions to that. Well, two or more, but the two major exceptions are Flash and Dreamweaver, as they were originally developed by Macromedia. You are not allowed to use those two pieces of software for commercial use, which doesn't affect me because I bought Dreamweaver separate from everything else anyway. And so
now, are you
I,
sure they're not talking about like commercial use in an educational setting?
No,
like
straight up, you can use that software to make money. You can also upgrade with a professional license next year. You have to buy the full upgrade. I mean, if you're not a student or an educator, you have to pay full price for the upgrade, but it's, you know, the upgrade is still massively discounted, right? So it's a really good setup. It's a good deal if you are a part of the educational system in any way, shape, or form. But it's all, like, there's some ins and outs, like the freehand flash or the
read the fine
Dreamweaver
print before you you.
It's not a fine things. Print thing. Like, you're looking at me skeptical, and I think that a lot of other people are skeptical. This is a whole new thing for Adobe, but yeah, I mean, it's the full thing. It's fully upgradable. Like, you don't. It's not like you're buying.
No, I believe
the small
in the fully
one now,
upgradable
you gotta
one.
Buy the large, you know, big, massive payment later. You can move on to just the upgrades after this, and you can totally, totally use it for your business, with no restrictions outside of the macromedia things that I've seen. And I think, like, Contribute, I don't know if that was before or after the merger. So I'm not sure. And that was not in the FAQ. Like, that was something I had to dig a little bit to find out. That was in, like, a license agreement, fine print thing. But it's there, and it's pretty pimp. So yay, CS4 still out. Still mildly erotic or packaging. I've also heard that the package design is actually Adobe giving the middle finger to people who just bought CS3, but I can also verify that my uncle, who was a designer in Colorado, picked it up. He actually just picked up CS3 like a week or two before they launched CS4, and they went ahead and gave him CS4.
Yeah,
they made that switch for him. That was pretty cool on their part.
You want to do that quickly if you just bought CS3 before they change their mind, or
yeah, or if you're out there buying CS3 now, why? I'm just putting that out there. Just saying. Anyway, so let's move on. We've talked about the CS4 quite a bit.
Now, you're going through a big thing right now with your Vossum is being rebranded into a new company, similar to what last time Adam Nielsen was on here. He changed his Bestow.
It was Bestow, and which people could not spell or say, which he found out. And so he switched it up to Good Twin. Good Twin now has a really sweet website, and we like it a lot. Good job, Adam. We also toured his new office for a local AIGA thing, which, despite all my grumblings about local AIGA, I do still tend to support and go to things and enter shows and things like that. So even though I'm not a member, people can't say that I don't support. So this kind of going to be our topic.
Okay.
Of such today is snap. Now I'm the one getting phone calls.
This is ridiculous.
No, just let it record, because that's what you would do. Everyone can hear my ringtone. It's my wife. So, Stephanie, on Thursday, which would be the day that we're going to launch this.
Right.
Right now, you called me, and I did not pick up the phone. So, that'll be a nice little time travel thing there.
That's
anyway,
pretty rude.
It is kind of rude, but, we're doing things. So, what were we talking about? Oh, yes. Rebranding, or let's just say branding your own company. I think it's...
This can be one of the hardest things to do. When I used to freelance...
Yeah.
Before I started my own company,
mm-hmm.
I never really branded my freelance company.
You were the Guatemar back then, right?
Yeah, the Guatemar Studios.
Yeah, once again, and how do you say or pronounce that? Let's go ahead.
We just said it.
But I have familiarity with it. I have familiarity with Bestow Design. But if you look at the way Adam spelled it, and he spelled it all like phonetically in junk, like that was tricky. I will also throw out Vossum, that you can go and see my terrible, terrible website at Vossum.com. I prefer if people want to see me, they go to 36 Point at the moment. Because 36 Point is easy to say, easy to spell, and easy to get to in a much better looking site. Holy crap, the
and
phones
now,
are ringing off the hook!
So the reason I never did get a brand back when I was freelancing was because I never had like that identity of what I wanted to do. Because it's so personal, you know, your brand in other people's company, well, it's easy to see their target market. And
right.
Even though you see your own target market and stuff, it's like you always want something more than you're capable of, almost.
Just about.
And it's also personal to you as well, where your client's work, even though it's, you know, you get attached to it, it's not like it's yours.
You brought up two huge things right there. First is determining your target market and actually doing your research. Most people, I mean, it's a big problem. I think don't actually do that. You make some assumptions. Oh, I want this. Oh, I'm a design firm. I should brand myself like a design firm or a freelancer, without doing the proper legwork. And two is that it's personal. It's a here's, you know, what do I want for me out there? And those are two things that, I mean, if you're a good graphic designer working for yourself, that would never come into play on any other type branding work that you're going to do. You know, it's not personal when it's a client. And if it's a client, y'all ought to be doing your legwork and your research.
And there's normally not that firm deadline attached to it.
Right. Well, yeah. And then one thing, geez, that's a good point. One thing that I've found to be very helpful when branding yourself is to set deadlines for yourself. Like you've got to, or you'll be doing it for a year and you'll never get it done. That's the way most now, agencies I've seen have done it that way. They just kind of do it whenever.
Now, when I launched 1119's identity and stuff, and we've changed it a little bit since, as far as like color scheme and stuff, but the logo has been similar.
Barely. People can't see. I'm holding my forefinger and thumb together very closely. Barely.
Well, we used to use it more in green and yellow. Now we're using it like in bronze.
Yeah, you hit up the bronze.
So, but when I went about it, what helped me the most was kind of looked at my business partner as the client.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually, even though basically I was going to have say on what we were going to do, I ran it through him like he was a client. And then I was able to actually come up with some ideas because I'm like, oh, I'm pitching this to a client.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that's helped me this time around, there's two reasons why I'm redoing it. Number one, same thing with Guatemar and Bisto is like, okay, Vossum, if you know me, if you know my last name, then you know how to say that. If you are what we like to call new clients, or people who don't already know me, with air quotes, you don't know how to say that. And we got a ton of Vossumes, Vossume. Like, who would actually pronounce that as a long E at the end of that? I have no idea. But it's been confusing from the beginning.
Now, I only changed names because I took a business partner and wanted to kind of have a fresh start, new way to pitch.
Right. So the other change is that full-time my wife is kind of joining the effort here. We've done some larger branding work for a local company, and just the amount of things that we are able to offer when it's the two of us versus just me has grown so much that we really need to, you know, do it right. You know, and especially it's not fair to her if it's, you know, go to Vossum right now and it's just like a crappy, like, okay, it's a bad site and it's just a blog that shows off work occasionally. And so we have to get something that represents, you know, both of us too. So you know, the reason for the branding is always the reason for the branding. You're either starting something new or there's been some substantial changes. You took on a partner. I'm kind of taking on a partner as well, and then there's other issues in there to sort out.
Now the other way you can do this,
sure,
and this gets done actually. A design firm, ad agency, creative agency will actually hire out there.
Dude, who does that? Who does that?
I'll tell you off the air, but there's
dude,
been a
tell
few.
Me right now.
No, I know of it.
Do
I
it in sign language.
One
around
of which,
here,
one of which turned out well.
Yeah,
and the other one, which was around here, I knew the designer who took on the job.
Yeah.
And it did not work well.
Just tell him. Just nod yes or no if it happened around. No. Don't even pause it. Just nod yes or no if it happened around here.
The one that didn't do well that I know of happened around here.
Okay.
And these
they hired
are the
you, didn't they?
No,
son of a bitch.
No, they didn't. I'm upset. No, actually, I'm not even upset. I didn't get
it. I can't think of a single company around here that would want me to do their stuff. Like. You know what we should hire that guy, Nate, if we want to look like a bunch of a-holes.
So what happens is you know, you take on your brand identity as a regular job, and you outsource it out, just
right.
Like you would another job that you may not have time for to get it scheduled.
Sure, I do that all the time.
But now, if you're
like
a designer,
now,
if you're a designer getting one of these jobs,
yeah.
like my friend did,
yeah.
you want to be a little bit careful because you have to remember that this is a client that is going to take your work way more personally than someone else would most likely.
Like, I can't even imagine taking that on.
I couldn't imagine doing a logo for your company for you.
I can't imagine allowing that to ever happen. Like, just suck it up and get it done.
No, sometimes it just falls through and you have huge paying jobs and, you know, you want to get something else done. But
Man, fundamentally, I think I have an issue with that. Because
here's where I say this. It would work well is if you're branding yourself and you said, hey, we have this certain look for our company that we're going on, but we know someone who does this style of part of it better. You just outsource it, like outsource that illustration.
That's like lying to your client. That's saying here's how we present ourselves,
but
we can't even pull it off.
Well,
so we hire somebody who does it better. Don't hire them.
What if you hire that person regularly and always selling their work?
You shouldn't be trading on somebody else's work anyway. And I don't know, that's kind of dicey because I know that you help me out with websites, but I don't know.
Well,
I don't know, man. We could talk about this for the rest of the show, but I'm not going to come out on the side if that's cool.
The other issue, you want to make sure that when, you know, there's always a problem when you go to a client and they said, well, we'd love to do this ourselves, but we just don't have the time. Because you have clients out, and that's why this didn't go well for my friend.
Okay, I'm done. Let's move on.
Yeah.
That is such a weird little probably hardly ever happens thing. Let's move on. First thing, we're talking about you've done your legwork.
Okay.
You've done your research, and you know your target market in the same way that you would know a client's target market. Oh, and real briefly, I want to go back to something that you said. Like, it certainly did help me to, when it wasn't just me, when it was me and my wife, to kind of reframe. Because even as much as you think you may know yourself, nobody really knows themselves as well as, say, someone very, very close to you knows you. Like that's a pretty common thing. And so when I had to describe the experience as people would, like, come into contact with us instead of with me,
right,
I found it to be much easier. Because I think I have a better handle on that than I do, you know, like, personal, like, self-confidence issues that abound. But anyway.
Plus, it's really hard to talk about yourself and not come off massive ego, where you can talk about your team.
Right.
Or we.
Or just the
speak it up a little
ubiquitous
bit
we, and put that out there as what the experience would be for the potential client. So you know all that. Now, number two thing I want to talk about, naming. As has been discussed here, naming is pretty important. You want something that's going to be catchy and easy. See, spell, read, all that good stuff. I'm going to throw it out there to people, though. Here's why I think that people, and sorry, I had to take a pause there. Here's why I think people settle on, here's my name, design, instead of naming the company. And I think it's because a lot of those start out as freelancers.
And it is easier to get freelance work if you're going by your own name, because they don't see you, like the larger agencies that would hire you, don't see you as competition.
Right, and I had a really good conversation. Feel like Adam should be here for this conversation. Feel like our man Steve Gordon should be here for this conversation now. Because when we were at Adam's thing, at his new office, I was talking to Steve, and he's ridiculous. If you go to ridiculous.com and spell
R D Q L U S,
yeah, spell it the correct way. Which, geez, man, so many red flags on spelling today. He's that company. That's his company's brand. But he makes it very well known that Ridiculous is just him. It's just Steve. He never says we. He never pulls any. Like, sometimes you can do that tricky, like, oh, we. And then your clients ask, well, who's we? And you're like, it's just me. Steve doesn't make any bones about
that. Steve Gordon's
that,
Ridiculous.
But he's not. But it's not Steve Gordon Design. And I think that from my point of view on this industry, if you want to show that you are creative and that you can execute creativity on a professional level, that you should spend a little bit of time on your name.
But you don't get you get a bigger ego if your name is the company.
Well, okay, yeah. If you're a huge ego dude, then you've probably already fast-forwarded past this part anyway. It certainly shouldn't be about your ego, because if it's about your ego, then it's not about your business and you're not doing your market research. You're just doing what you want to do, and that's why most people can't brand themselves. So booyah. All right. So you've got a creative name that is not just your freelance, here's my name, design, or here's my name, communications, which, you know, I know a lot of people that have those and they're not necessarily bad, but it's just like, come on, let's get that creativity out there. So next step, you've got a name, you've got a you got your research. Now it's time to start doing the fun stuff. Now it's time to start doing the work. And the way I think that the lesson in today's show really just needs to be, don't do the work like a personal project. Do the work like a client. Like the way you would handle clients' work. Take a step back from it. Establish goals. Write a creative brief, for crying out loud. You know, go back and listen to our interviews with Stanley Hainsworth or Joe Duffy from the Be a Design Cast, and you know, take a look at how those guys approach branding. Like with Stanley, like we, for the, you know, for what we're doing on ourselves right now, like we did the 5 words thing.
Okay.
Like I always do the 5 words thing now. It's just such an amazing litmus test for all of your work, and it always works for me to do things.
And you also want to remember, though, you don't want to go with who your target audience is. It's who you expect your target audience to be. If you're rebranding, that part of the reason you're rebranding is to get a different target audience?
I'm gonna throw a little curveball at you and say, should it be who you expect it to be? This is a question, actually. Should it be who you expect it to be, or should it be who you want it to be? It's a question for Donovan Beery right there.
Well, who you want it to be, it's who you realistically will be.
Okay. Because right now we're kind of aiming for just this broad definition of who we want it to be and saying that we're okay with that. I don't know that there's a good answer for that. It depends on who you are and what you want to do with your company.
Most of the time, I think with a creative agency, I think it's going to be close. Those two answers are going to be closer than you would think.
Right. Okay. So when you're doing your work,
it's not like, you know, the difference between McDonald's selling to mothers and Burger King selling to 18-year-old boys, which is a huge change.
That's a pretty big switch. Yeah.
Your who you want your audience to be and who it really is probably fairly close.
Well, McDonald's, as a case study there, they used to sell to mothers also, and then they did the I'm loving it switch, which at this point I got to give it up. I'm okay with I'm loving it, but man, when they started that, I was like, that is stupid. Anyway, we're not going to talk about crazy rebrands today. We're just talking about brands in general for the creatives. So really the end lesson here for when you do the work is have a plan, have a creative brief, tackle it the way you would tackle any other paying work, so that you know that it's research, it's got concept behind it, so it's got thought behind it, so that it can attack an audience and not just, here's me, here's the stuff that I like, here's what I want to do, so I'm going to do it like that. That's how people fail. That's why branding yourself is the hardest thing to do, because generally it takes so much effort to remove your personal feelings from the project.
Right.
And that's the trick. That's what you have to get past.
And then
I think
beauty is once you're done with it, you can see how your client always feels and why they hate you.
Yeah, totally. You'd be like, oh, I had to design myself like a jerk because I am. Dag.
Oh.
And then you got to rebrand. I think we can wrap this one up.
Okay.
I think we're good to go. Tune in. You know, I'll put a link up because I'll be all kinds of proud of it when it's done, but it should be here.
Yeah, leave any
should
comments on any of this stuff,
of the
telling us where we're right, where we're wrong on 36point.com.
I think that pretty much all the comments we're going to get are, Jesus Christ, you guys are right all the time. Oh, my God.
Signed Nate.
Signed me.
Okay, so we did get some listener mail here.
Yeah, we're gonna rock a quick listener
from
mail.
From Dylan here.
We actually got another listener mail, and I forgot to bring it.
Oh,
so maybe we'll do that one on next
show.
They
didn't copy me in on it?
Guy who sent me mail who I never replied.
If you don't copy us both in, that's what happens.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, so
that's,
hey guys, love the show. Been listening since the golden days of Be a Design Podcast. First, I missed the taboo typeface portion of the older show. You should bring it back. In fact, I have a nomination. Now, we do bring it every now and then.
Actually, you know what? When we started the show, we brought it back, and I think that it's less that we're excluding it on purpose and more that we're excluding it by lack of remembering to do it at the end of the show.
Or if we've had someone on multiple times, like Steve Ward, and we don't ask him every time.
Yeah. Also, I would say that some of our guests try to be cooler than that.
But he brings in a little bit of definition here. So Dylan's taboo typeface is Zapfino, but he says he's not sure why this typeface has grown to such popularity, but here's my theory. It's usually last in the list of typeface on your computer and looks different. It's usually suggested by clients that bring up my question. I'm designing a CD, and my client suggested this typeface, And this was what she was suggested after Papyrus, of course.
Right. Holy shit.
Yeah. After I told
sorry
her,
for the,
I wouldn't
yeah, I'm trying not to swear as much on the show.
Yeah.
But.
After I told her I wouldn't recommend Papyrus because she told me she wanted to stand out, she suggested Zapfino, and not just for the headlines, for all the fine print. It takes up so much room. Don't get him started. What do you do when you hire to be a designer, but you end up being treated like a production artist?
Man, I can... Okay, there's two questions in there. First, I can answer your client's question for you right now. The answer is, if you want to stand out, you can't use these set of system-level typefaces. What you need to explain is that there is a whole world of type design out there. Yeah.
And I would say this answers the question of why the clients always ask for it. Because the clients only know the typefaces that are on their machine by default.
Yeah, and you know, hell, before I got into type, I was like, okay, that's what there is. And sometimes they might release more, but you know, who knows these things besides us?
If you show them a type, they're like, oh, that's Arial, and they're like, no, it's Helvetica. They don't know the
difference. So you can explain to them very, very quickly and just say, well, number one, like, I've got access to a bojillion typefaces. And start throwing around the word typeface instead of font during that conversation, because they're automatically going to be like, whoa, dude understands on a level.
And when they mention something like Zapfino, what you want to say is, oh, you want more of a script-based typeface. Maybe you could do something hand-rendered.
Yeah, maybe you could do hand-rendered. Maybe you could actually hire out calligraphy, because I've done some calligraphy, and those people, there's not a lot of people that do that anymore, but they don't tend to charge like a ton because most of them do things like wedding invites. So those are pretty easy to track down. Do that. Say, okay, you know, I think that was good advice, Donovan. You just say, here's, okay, this is what I feel like you're going for, but because it's a system level typeface, everyone has it. And there's absolutely nothing uncommon about Zapfino or Papyrus. They're ubiquitous. They're everywhere because everyone has them. So right there, you can say you're missing your goal. But here's what you want. Oh, okay, I'm a designer. I know how to get you
and
that.
And of course, you don't want to use that for fine print. You want to say, no, we need to be legible, you know, in the type, and we will find something that complements it.
Yeah, and with stuff like that, dude, what's guy's name for me?
Dylan
now?
Here.
Dylan, you just say no. My answer to his second question.
Okay, now this is the last part of his question.
No, I would not.
He says, I feel like I can only argue so much with a client over horrible decisions before I get a rep as hard to work with. I tried to get to the root of what she was trying to convey, but clearly she has no clue.
Okay, here's my answer to that, and this should be pretty concise, or as concise as it is possible for me to be. Your client is not treating you like a production artist. You are treating you like a production artist. You need to get over that. You need to. There are ways to stand up for what is right in design without being a dick and without being hard to work with. Now, at the end of the day, it's ultimately going to be the paying client's decision. But, you know, really, as the designer, it's up to you as to whether or not you're going to allow those options to be a part of the conversation. You can say no at any point to typographic decisions and just say, you know, no, we're not going to use Times New
Roman. But the other thing you want to talk about is you really want to talk about get off of the actual typeface selections with them, because if you start talking typeface names with them, that's where you start to lose. You want to talk about the feeling that you're trying to convey. Mm-hmm. You want to talk about the message. You want to talk about the target audience.
I think that's really it. It's like in your conversations with your client, are you, are the conversations operating at a baseline level of production? We're going to make it this color versus this color. We're going to make it this typeface versus this font. Or are you operating on a higher level? Now, when you as the designer are operating on a higher level, when you're talking about how things feel and how they communicate and, you know, what is the client after as an end result as opposed to what's going to make them happy now, that client can go ahead and put a lot more faith that you're going to make the decisions
and normally anytime
that need
you
to
even,
be made.
Anytime you start talking about anything dealing with the typefaces, you will start to lose because they will start thinking that they have a say in that part.
Yeah, and basically, yeah, I would say it's the designer's responsibility to be like, no, man, I got that. That's what I'm here to do. And the trick to this is, and maybe this could be a show topic, maybe we invite some people on and do this next time, how to do that without being a dick. Because I think that is a problem that a lot of people have. Like, he's worried about getting a rep as being hard to work with. You know, you can be easy cheesy, easy breezy to work with and still do the kind of work that you want to do. Being easy to work with doesn't mean giving the client all of their inane, crazy
decisions. It's like when Joe Duffy...
It just means being easy.
When Joe Duffy speaks, he has clients actually do the mood boards with him.
That's one way. But we should say this for another show.
Well, I'm just saying the reason he
does
that is because he just says the client's going to be involved somewhere. Expect that.
Yeah.
Just don't have them involved in the type.
Right. Yeah. You gotta decide where to do that. And you know, and we just did a very similar thing with the party bus company that we just did. They got involved in the beginning when it came down to things like typeface selection and photography style. Like, we had already made decisions on what that was gonna look like way back during the concept level with them. So when it came to doing it, all we had to do was execute on that. And it didn't matter that it was that typeface. It just mattered that the type styles that we put in front of them didn't include Papyrus and Zaffino. I think we can call it a show. Donovan, I want to dedicate this show to our handful of listeners in New Zealand. There's a couple of them.
Sweet.
A couple Kiwi, which is just a handful, because now that we got crazy Google stats, we can say what bizarre part of the world do people listen to the show
that's
in.
That's not really bizarre anymore. They got movie production companies down there that
Dude,
are awesome.
New Zealand is rad. I can throw out Lord of the Rings. We can throw out Flight of the Conchords. It's basically a something of the something. They got a lock on the something of the something down there.
And everything is awesome.
Also, I gotta throw it out to Zebra versus Shark. Or is it Zebra versus Shark? It's Shark versus Eagle, which is a throw off of Flight of the Conchords. But I'll say out to my our Kiwi listeners. That if Barack Obama had lost the election, I told my wife that's where we were going to move. So that's my number two place to live, because you never really hear about anything bad
Omaha
happening.
Nebraska being number one.
Not necessarily, but that's where I am now. And so we're gonna send it off with that. Let's go ahead and get out of here. So peace out.
To send questions or comments to the Reflex Blue Show, please visit 36point.com. The Reflex Blue Show is hosted by Nate Voss and Donovan Beery, music produced by Dust Lab. Find out more at myspace.com/dustlab.